Hello, everyone. Welcome to your first meeting of the Chatham County Historic Preservation Commission. This is Leah Mahalik, the Director of Historic Preservation. I met all of you at Monday's training. And the other staff person who you will hear from regularly is Monica Gann. If you want to come up and introduce yourself, Monica.
Hi, everyone. This is Monica Gann.
Thanks. So you'll be, we're the two staff people that you'll be hearing from and working with regularly. So before we start going down the agenda, I just want everybody to know that actually at the end, you all will be nominating a chairperson and a vice chairperson. So as we go through the meeting today, if you all could think about who you want to nominate out of the five of you at the end. There's only two here so far? Okay. Well, we actually don't have quorum then. So we will wait until we get more people here. So I will be back.
Ronald Horton, you're not showing a mic. You may need to dial in with the number that was on your email. If you open up the chat window, I'll also put it in the chat window. Oh, here's your mic. You're self-muted now. Mr. Horton, you're showing self-muted. We're showing a mic for you. I'll put the information. May need to call in for the audio portion.
Hello?
Hi, Mr. Horton.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Great, thank you. Patricia Hackney, checking your audio. We're not showing a mic for you. I'll send you the info in the chat box. If you can open that, you may need to dial in, call in to get for us to be able to hear you. Ms. Hackney, checking your audio?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. And Ms. Lumpkin-Lotson, checking your audio?
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent, thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm going to start over. I didn't realize when I started right at 3 that we didn't have everybody, so I'm just going to start over. Welcome to your first meeting of the Chatham County Historic Preservation Commission. This is Leah Mahalik. I am the Director of Historic Preservation here at the MPC. You all probably remember me from the training on Monday. I am one of the two staff people who will be working with you regularly, and I'm going to have the other one introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. This is Monica Gann.
So it'll be the two of us that you'll contact or be working with, or whatever we can do to help. So if anyone had a chance to look at their agenda today, at the end of the meeting, you will be nominating a chairperson and a vice chairperson. But I thought it would be better if I sort of ran you through the agenda today. That way you all could get to know each other a little bit and then nominate the chair and the vice chair at the end of the meeting. So I was hoping that each of you would introduce yourself and just say a few words. Let's start with Bernetta, please.
I am Dr. Bernetta Rivers-Smalls. I'm a local Savannian. I'm also a local pastor for approximately 32 years. And I've had many hats on. I've been employed with the city of Savannah, Savannah State Armstrong. I'm happily retired and able to have the community to help me to help them. Thank you.
Thank you. How about Miranda?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Miranda Lumpkin-Lotson, and I am a native of Savannah. Most technically, though, I am a native of Thunderbolt, Georgia. But I grew up in the Savannah community all of my life. Professionally, I work with the city of Savannah in the Department of Economic Development as manager over small and minority business programs.
Ronald?
Yes, my name's Ron Horton. I've been the owner of Savannah Millwork for 35 years, done a lot of historic preservation in Savannah, most of the historic houses, museums, most recently even the Cockspur Lighthouse. We've supplied many architectural details and been involved in many projects. And even was involved in Mrs. Small's house. So, hi, Bernetta, how you doing?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Anyway, so I'm very much recently sold my business about 4 months ago. I still am working in that capacity for the new owner. We're working on some houses on 38th Street and just so many different projects downtown still. So I'm very excited to be part of this commission, and I've got a few things that I'm interested in getting done. So thank you very much for having me on the commission.
Thank you. How about Wendy?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Oh, hi. I'm Wendy Bacone, and I moved to Savannah about 7 years ago from a small historic town in Hudson, Ohio, and actually I built a replica 1820 Southern Victoria home. I bought a home on East 39th Street, which is a 1902 home, and totally renovated the downstairs myself with some contractors. So I'm retired from IBM after about 40 years, and I've moved many, many, many times with them, and was always interested in historic towns and historic buildings and homes. So I'm hoping I can help out this preservation committee.
Thank you. And last but not least, Patricia.
I'm Pat Hackney. Am I next?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. Ma'am.
Yes, I'm Pat Hackney, and I'm the retired county extension director for the University of Georgia Extension Service in Chatham County. I'm not a native of Savannah. I'm a native of North Georgia, but I've lived in Chatham County for off and on for many years. I'm very involved with the Coastal Georgia Botanical Gardens at the historic Bamboo Farm, and was responsible for our celebrating our 100th anniversary out there just 2 years ago in 2019. I'm very interested in historic preservation. I love the history of Savannah and the old homes and buildings, and I'm very interested in helping to preserve whatever that we can. So I'm delighted to be among this group.
Thanks, everyone. And we're glad to meet all of you and look forward to working with you. So I'm going to sort of act as chair for you all today. You can kind of get an idea of how this will work when the chair is in charge. We do use Robert's Rules of Order to run the meetings. So I'll try to do my best to kind of show you how that works for the future. So we did the call to order and welcome, and the commission staff member introductions. And we do not have any signpostings. Number two, no signpostings as of yet. And number three, obviously you all haven't had any agenda items yet, so there would not be anything on the consent agenda. So number four, the adoption of the agenda. May I have a motion to approve to adopt the agenda as listed?
Motion.
Thank you. Second. Oh, I'm sorry. Second. Can you all say your names before you?
Okay, yep. Pat Hackney, seconding.
Ron Horton, first motion.
Thank you. Bernetta, how do you vote?
I vote yes.
Ronald?
Yes.
Pat?
Yes.
Wendy?
Yes.
And Miranda?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the agenda is adopted. We don't have any minutes yet, but next meeting you will approve those as well. We obviously don't have any items yet to be removed or continued or any requests for extension. So we are going to move on to the regular agenda, and feel free to stop me at any point. What I'm gonna start with is going over your purpose and the areas of the county that you're responsible for. We're gonna go over some historic resources maps and the comprehensive plan for the historic and cultural resources portion. Your bylaws and as they exist now, I'm gonna show you a draft that we created late last year and updated as recently the other day. We're gonna go through that, and ultimately you all will make suggestions and recommendations on changing that if you choose so. Same thing with the procedural manual as well as the Chatham County Historic Preservation Ordinance. What I did wanna talk about is how long you all wanna go today, because we could go on for hours. We have a lot to do. As you all know, this is a commission that's starting back up after not basically being in service for over a decade. So we have a lot to do. Things have changed a lot. We have a lot to do. Things have changed a lot in that decade, but I wanna go over a lot of what has been done. So my thought, but if you all can discuss it, I was thinking about an hour and a half today, maximum. How does that sound to everybody?
That's fine.
Yes.
That's great.
All right. Sounds like we'll do max of an hour and a half. Anybody gets tired, you just let me know. So we're going to start with your purpose. This is in your bylaws, but I wanted to pull it out separately. All right, so your purpose, as in your bylaws right now, is the finding and determination of the Board of Commissioners of Chatham County, Georgia, that the historical, cultural, and aesthetic heritage of Chatham County is among its most valued and important assets, and that the preservation of this heritage is essential to the promotion of the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. Therefore, it is the purpose and intent of the ordinance to establish a uniform procedure to provide for the protection, enhancement, perpetuation, and use of areas having a special historical, cultural, or aesthetic interest or value. So I thought it would be good to start by showing you your, I thought we had a county map. So your purview is all of unincorporated Chatham County. So that specifically does not include anything in the city of Savannah limits. It does not include any incorporated areas such as Tybee, Pooler, Garden City, Bloomingdale, those other places. So anything in unincorporated Chatham County. Trying to scroll out so we can see the boundary here. You can see the boundary there. This is Ossabaw Island down here. Wendy, you have your hand up. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just voting on the hour and a half a while ago.
Thank you, appreciate it. Uh-huh. So that is the, you know, the geographical area of your purview. There are a lot of tabs. All right, here we go. So what we have here are four maps, because the county is so large, as you just saw. Wait for this to load. So the unincorporated Chatham County has never been comprehensively surveyed. You all learned quite a bit about historic resources and cultural resource surveys in your training the other day. Chatham County, unincorporated Chatham County, had about 250 resources surveyed in the 1990s, and that's about it, officially surveyed for the state and in the state system. And it has not been updated since. So what we have here is four maps dividing the county showing those 250 resources. And we labeled them as potential historic resources because at this time, one, they haven't been resurveyed. So we honestly don't know what's there anymore, if it's there, what it looks like, those things of those nature. So we have these maps created and there's some pullouts when things are closer together, but it lists all 250 of those resources in blue. And there is a supplement that goes with that because obviously the maps don't tell you very specific information about it. So we have it divided up from the Back Barrier Islands, River and Coastal Barrier Islands, Southeast Chatham, and Southwest Chatham. So there is a supplement that goes with that that we can send out. We're gonna, you'll have access to all of these links from the agenda, that link that we sent you, but we will send these to you in email.
Can I ask a question, please?
Please do, yes.
On the first map, you have different locations identified. Are you saying that those properties are identified but not surveyed? Is that correct?
So they were surveyed in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't been surveyed again since the 1990s, nor are all of these, not all of these properties are listed on the National Register. Okay. Some of them are, and I'll show you a map from the comprehensive plan, which mm-hmm. Which lists the ones that are actually listed on the National Register already. So obviously places like Fort Jackson, which is actually a national landmark, but these are all the ones that were identified in the 1990s.
Okay. What's piquing my interest right off the bat is number 6, 243 Falcon Avenue. That's one of the main missions that I was interested in joining the commission on. So that's my question. very good. Familiar with piece of property.
Good. So, and the Back Barrier Islands, is that a just because I don't have all 250 memorized, is that a residence? What is that resource?
That's Joseph Bryan's. It's a cemetery. It's an above ground crypt, and it's being encroached upon right now by the neighbors. So it's, and, we'll discuss it later, but it's particularly interesting. It's, like I say, very historical, and okay. And the crypts are there and everything else. So I'm anxious to work on that particular property, you know, right off the bat.
Terrific, because what I was going to ask you all to do is identify some resources, and they don't have to be certainly don't have to be the 250 listed here. Identify some resources that are, you know, that you have found to be important, not just to you, but to the community, ones you're already familiar with, so that we can start to form a list of where to start. So that's great. I'm glad that you identified that one.
Matter of fact, one of the original descendants of the Bryans recently got involved and formed a nonprofit for that piece of property and had it surveyed. So it's really ready for us to do what we got to do on it.
That's terrific. That sounds like we might have a first project.
Right.
Wonderful. I'm glad that you brought that up. Thank you. And you can see that there's an inset map of this area because there are several identified resources over there. So you all have access to all of these. And again, I'll show you which ones are already listed on the National Register, which again, as you learned in your training the other day, actually does not provide any protections. It's really an accolade. So what we're here to do, what you all are here to do, is get them locally protected. And that's why we want to go over your ordinance, and I want to show you what properties and districts already exist that are already protected and how we can expand upon those and or update those ones. So again, here are the 250 resources that were identified in the 1990s. So the comprehensive plan was updated. It's Plan 2040. So it was just adopted in October of last year. So this is the entire comprehensive plan. We are not going to go through that today, but here is the link, and you are welcome to go through it at your leisure. But what I'm going to show you today is the quality of life chapter, which is where the historic and historic and cultural resources section is. And I would strongly encourage you all to read through this, but it really starts with a history, a very, very brief history of an introduction, we'll say. And then some history and what the Oglethorpe plan is. Now, remember, this is the city and county together. So they had us do the comprehensive plan together, city and unincorporated Chatham County. So it talks about what a historic resources survey is. It sort of sums up what the elements are that are addressed in this comp plan. So historic resources surveys, resources impacted by climate change, inclusive surveying. And here's a summary of recent past historic preservation in Chatham County. This is a overview of the Savannah Citywide Survey Project that started in 2012. We're still working on it. As recently as yesterday, we're proposing text amendments to add more historic resources. So thus, the MPC also has the Historic Site and Monument Commission, and that's one of the four boards that the Historic Preservation, including you all, that the Historic Preservation Department staffs. So in addition to historic and cultural resources, this department also deals with markers, monuments, public art, murals. So we have a summary of those as well. Here is a summary and a case study of how preservation and affordable housing relate to each other. how historic preservation relates to healthy communities. You know, it consists of things such as obviously, you know, public health crises, as well as walkable communities. So preservation and climate resiliency. This is something that with, you know, unincorporated Chatham County has a lot of coastal resources. So this is something that as a commission, you all are going to be dealing with a lot, especially as we identify which ones are at risk of being damaged or disappearing due to you know, climate change and what we can do to mitigate those effects. Our department is currently working on a disaster mitigation plan, which will provide some recommendations on how to mitigate these, the effects of these, of climate change. So inclusive histories, inclusive history. So promoting underrepresented stories, building inclusive preservation practices. So, you know, difficult histories, we want to start identifying those sites. You know, a lot of the sites identified in the 1990s obviously didn't, you know, promote underrepresented stories. Heritage tourism. So it discusses a little bit about the Savannah heritage tourism, which we already know is a booming industry, but the potential of expanding heritage tourism in Chatham County and what that might look like. Archaeological resources are also a part of what we do, however, or I should say what should be part of what we do. The city has a sort of a starter of an archaeology ordinance from 2019 that requires a phase one survey for any city-owned properties. So we may look at additional county archaeology ordinances. And so these are the things that I was talking about. So we'll skip over the City of Savannah maps. So historic districts, NRHP is the National Register of Historic Places in unincorporated Chatham County. So here are the historic districts that are already listed on the National Register. Fort Pulaski National Monument, Wormslow Plantation, Bethesda Home for Boys, Isle of Hope Historic District, Ossabaw Island, the Savannah and Ogeechee Canal. So those are National Register listed districts. You also have some individually listed National Register historic properties, and that is the Eureka Club, Fort James Jackson, Lebanon Plantation, New Ogeechee Missionary Baptist Church, and Wild Heron Plantation, already listed. And here is a map of those and where they are located in the county. Obviously, Ossabaw here, here's the Essano Canal. Fort Jackson, Meridon. Here are some of the districts, Isle of Hope, Wild Heron Plantation. But what you also have is some locally listed districts as well as individual properties. These were done, as you can see, one is 2007, 2011. 2007 is really when this commission was really up and running. So three properties back then. Pennyworth Island, which is an archaeological resource, was added in 2011. And most recently, we did this through the regular planning commission, Isle of Hope Missionary Baptist Church wanted to be individually listed as a local, locally protected. And so we did that in 2019. And here is a map of the locally protected resources. And when we look at the ordinance and some other protections, we'll talk a little bit more about how each of these resources are protected and what that means. If anybody's familiar with Pennyworth Island, at this point, it's an archaeological resource. There are no structures on that island. So here are goals for historic and cultural resources in the county and the city. So goal one is surveying. That is going to be, you know, one of the number one things that we are looking at as a commission. Surveys really need to be updated in this area. There is actually, we put in on your behalf before the commission was up and running, before you all were ready to start, we put in a grant application to, you all are a certified local government, the county is. So I know that the trainers explained a little bit about that. But when you're a certified local government, you're eligible for grants for historic preservation work in your area, so unincorporated Chatham County. So on your behalf, we applied for a grant with the county commission, it's a matching grant, to resurvey slash survey 500 resources. So fingers crossed, we will not know until May whether we were awarded that grant to start working. And again, fingers crossed. Then we can, what we were thinking, and we want to work with you on this, is the, you know, sort of first thing first, resurvey those 250 resources, make sure they're still there, see what their integrity is. And then the other 250, we want you all to identify sort of the ones at risk, the ones that you all consider most important, the ones the community consider most important. And we'll use that to survey a total of 500. That is the maximum we could apply for the grant. So keep that one in the back of your mind that we get that grant and we can start surveying this summer. Typically we hire a consultant to do that work and then we manage the grant for them, for the consultant. We've done that, the MPC has done that on since 2012 on that citywide survey. We managed to grant 4 grants so far. This will hopefully be our 5th from this program. So that's sort of where we should start as a commission. Incorporate affordable housing strategies is goal number 2. I think we're a ways away from deciding how something like that might work. Count for the county specifically, but it's of course something that we'll all talk about. Addressing community health issues and their impact on historic preservation efforts. And again, we have some objectives over here that say how we would do these things. Goal 4, identify and address climate resilience strategies and incorporate them into a climate resiliency plan for UCC. So as I mentioned, this department has started working on one, and as we progress on that, we'll have the staff, and that's Aslan Drosky and Nirav Gandhi from our offices here, that are from the department that are working on this plan. And as we get further into it, we will have them come and give you updates on this plan, and especially as we start identifying coastal resources that are in potential distress. Again, broaden historic preservation efforts to include underrepresented story sites and communities. So that could include Black, Indigenous, people of color, LGBTQ, you know, those groups that have been underrepresented in the past. Again, to discuss potential or not potential, depending on, you know, what the county wants, expanding heritage tourism programming in Chatham County. And archaeology, to promote public awareness of archaeology. So that is a lot of information, but I think it's very important that you all know what's in your comprehensive plan for unincorporated Chatham County as historic and cultural resources are concerned. Can I answer any questions about all of those goals? You don't have to digest it all right now. This is all linked to your agenda, so some late night reading.
Is this in a printed form anywhere?
So I know we have some, we have some hard copies here in the office. Is anybody on who could answer that question? Pamela Everett, are you on?
Yep. I am sorry, I couldn't get to mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I can find it.
Okay.
Yeah, I can find it and get it to the board.
How many folks would like a hard copy, or is it?
I would like one.
I would.
I would all.
Could you say your name before you say that, just so we know?
Well, we can send, we'll send it out to the entire board.
Okay, terrific. So five copies. We will get you five copies and get them in the mail.
Excellent, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and there is one appendix too. This is at the end of the comprehensive plan. It's one of many appendices, but I wouldn't say this is completely comprehensive of Savannah and Chatham County, but it's we focus on the planning efforts, obviously being a, you know, a planning document. We focus on the planning efforts of the history of Savannah and Chatham County. So again, feel free to read that at your leisure. And, you know, a lot of it, not a lot of it, but there's a focus, especially at the beginning, on the Oglethorpe plan, but then it moves into plantations and other planning and historically Black communities, Pinpoint, Sandfly, you know, things of that nature. So feel free to digest that as well. And that is in the comprehensive plan. All right, so let's move on to your bylaws, unless anybody has any questions about that. Oh, you know what? I wanted to show you one more thing on the website. So on our website, which is thempc.org, at the top, you'll see historic preservation boards. And then this is you over here, Chatham County Historic Preservation Commission. So Chatham County Historic Districts and Properties. This is where you will find all of, and of course, you as commissioner certainly don't have to come here, but if you want to direct people, or if you want to look yourself, here are all the ordinances, maps, and applications for the locally listed districts and properties that we discussed. Pinpoint, Pennyworth, New Ogeechee, Meriden, and Isle of Hope Church. So there is a overarching preservation ordinance, which allows for the creation of individual ordinances for each district and property. The one we are going to start with is the overarching ordinance, and then probably go through some of these other ones to make them all consistent with any changes that we make to the overarching ordinance. So that's where you can find all of this. So your bylaws. Here's a draft that we created, as I mentioned, at the end of last year. I don't think that we should or need to go through this word for word today. What might make sense is if you all go through it and recommend any changes, additions. We could also, you know, set aside, you know, one meeting specifically to go through it together. You know, after you've had a chance to look at it, it includes, you know, the creation of your board, the name of your board, you know, what allowed you to be created, your duties and purpose, which is the part that I put in at the beginning, which code of ethics you all have adopted in this ordinance. And we attached the National Alliance of Preservation Commissions Code of Ethics for Commissioners and Staff as an appendix. So that entire ethics and ethics code has been adopted. Your composition, so five residents, all members of Chatham County, demonstrated special interest in preservation. Two representatives of professions in which they're related, your jurisdiction, which includes elements of, yeah, I guess that's one of the things we should talk about. And again, I think it came up in the training, but when you're reviewing projects, which that'll come up eventually where you'll actually, you know, issue certificates of appropriateness and implement the standards from these ordinances. Your purview is from the public right of way. So you don't have purview over the interior arrangement. You don't have purview over anything you can't see from a public right of way. So that's typically streets, lanes, sidewalks. I always like to make the joke that it's not from your bedroom window. You don't have purview of what you can see from your bedroom window into your neighbor's bedroom window or anything like that. You can see here, shall not consider the interior arrangement of structures, but shall include elements of development, rehabilitation, preservation, demolition that affect the exterior visual quality of the historic district or historic property, specifically including exterior appearance of structures within the district or property. This also, it doesn't state it here, but use of a building isn't within your purview. For example, if there's a church, it was built as a church, you cannot tell them it can only be used as a church. That is handled within the base zoning and what uses are allowed on that parcel. You also can't, you can discuss where the parking is on the site, but you can't discuss, or you can discuss it, but you can't make decisions based on traffic, traffic impact, parking quantities, things of those nature. You really focus on the historic nature of the project or the new construction, depending on the ordinance that's going into the district. These are your terms. Your first terms are staggered. Let's see, I have it written here. So your terms are staggered so that you all don't go off the board at one time. It looks like Ms. Smalls is a one-year term to start with. Now you all are eligible for second terms. Ronald is 2023, Miranda is 23, Wendy 2024, and Patricia 2024. That should have been, that information is also in the letters that you received from the county. But you are eligible for a second term. Preservation professional, that is basically the staff you're speaking with today. The executive director is Melanie Wilson. And she obviously has designated us as her professional staff to staff your board. And it is our job to support you as a board. And we receive and review all certificate of appropriateness applications, applications for designation as district and properties. We make recommendations, but you all, we make recommendations to you all. You all, you vote. You're the voters. You have the final decision, except in the case of appeals. So this is what we talked about a little bit earlier, is that you shall have a chairperson and a vice chairperson, and these are the terms of office. And so we will discuss nominations at the end of the meeting today. Terms of officers shall begin in January. Obviously, that's a little bit different here. We're starting in March, so we will go through until January and then get on our yearly schedule. Powers and duties of the person and chairperson. And of course, you serve without pay. You shall not receive a salary. This is when your meetings are. So regular meetings may be held every other month, beginning in January of each year. We are wrapping up, and Pam, is April, is it as of April 1st, we're not going to do virtual meetings anymore? Could you please go over that?
Yes, as of April 1st, we'll be going back to in-person meetings. However, if someone has an absolute reason that they need to attend virtually, we'll make a concession. Although at some point, I'm sure the state is going to come down and tell us that we can't do it anymore. It will also depend upon community transmission rate. So if the community transmission rate goes back up, then we may go back to virtual meetings or semi-virtual meetings.
We'll obviously keep you abreast of what what changes and what the policy is at that time. But sounds like as of April 1st, we have to be in person, we're, you know, we have to be, and we're going to be fully in person, like Pam said, unless there's extenuating circumstances, which you can discuss with, you know, us, her, and her. I can give you her information directly. So basically, it's every other month. If we find that we need less meetings, if we find we need more meetings, that's why it says May. We can adjust that. We can do special called meetings if needed. This is about meeting minutes. So rules, all meetings shall be conducted in accordance with the most recent edition of Robert's Rules of Order. And this is one of the links that Monica will send you, and that's a link to Robert's Rules of Order. Tells you how to you know, make a motion, how, you know, what you can and can't say at a meeting, you know, those sorts of things, which we'll talk a little bit more about. So staff prepares an agenda for each meeting. You probably received the links for the preliminary agenda, which comes out the week before the meeting, and then we republish the final agenda the morning of the meeting, and that'll be consistent. You will see that happen every month on the same day. Quorum consists of three members, so we have to have three of the five of you to have a meeting. Attendance, so a member who fails to attend any three consecutive meetings without a written excuse, maybe it's up to the county commission, but may be replaced by the county commission. So conflicts of interest, we do have a disclosure form at the end that we'll look at. Actually, Pam, if you could explain conflict of interest, you're much better at it than me.
Sure. Basically, for a conflict of interest, the way the ordinance reads and the form reads is that if you have a financial conflict of interest, meaning that you or a family member have an interest in a property, you should not vote on it. And you'll need to complete a conflict of interest disclosure form and submit it so that we can attach it to the record to show why you didn't vote.
That's here attached at the end of your bylaws. Thank you, Pam.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay. So conflict. Committees. So you should have you as a commission shall have a standing nominating committee and other ad hoc committees, and the chairperson creates those. So a nominating committee, and that's sort of what we're discussing now, but for the first time, you'll nominate as a board, but going forward for chair and vice chair, as we approach January of each year, the chairperson will create a nominating committee, and that nominating committee will nominate the chair and vice chair for the following year, and then the commission votes on their nominations. There are certain items that the bylaws allow staff to decide without coming to the full board. This is one of the things that it would be great if you all looked at and make sure you're comfortable with it, because any of this that you see other than legalities in these bylaws are amendable. We can change them based on your recommendations. So when we created these, we took sort of the basic items that staff typically has approved in the past without commission input, roof repairs or replacements, recovering awnings, new awnings, stucco repair, brick repair, changing shutters, window and door repair replacement, and very specifically, except when the change in the size of any of these opening or creating a new opening, that goes directly to you all. Mechanical equipment, screening, changing existing signs and the placement of new signs, changes to fences or construction of new fences and demolition of non-contributing buildings. This is sort of the typical. It's also combined with the ones that were listed in your all's previous bylaws when this commission was created the first time. So that's definitely one section it would be great if you all looked at to see if you feel comfortable with those. And then this is the procedure for amending your bylaws. So it can be amended by an affirmative vote of the majority of your commission. So once we've all, you know, settled on any amendments and everybody, you know, then there'll be a vote to amend them and then they'll be in place. So that's definitely one of the first things you all need to do is amend and adopt your bylaws. So procedural manual. And any questions about the bylaws? Okay, that's as you saw, basically all of your legalities. Procedural manual. It talks all about literally your procedures of your meeting. You know, what types of meetings you have, regular meetings, special called, where they're located, how to reschedule a meeting, what type of agendas go out. And this is what we talked about, what I talked about a little bit a few minutes ago. There's three types of agendas that go out. A tentative agenda goes out shortly after the deadline, and it's an informal list of all issues and applications. So it's basically designed to give you an idea very early, you know, a month before your meeting, what might be on your next agenda. The preliminary agenda is a formal list of everything received. It has all of the staff recommendations, correspondence, data. So it's published on the MPC website, but it's emailed to you all specifically, like I did last month, at least 4 days prior to your meeting. And then the final agenda, sometimes is the same as preliminary agenda. Often things have changed, been removed, updated staff report, those sort of things. And we republish that the morning of the meeting, which if you all had a chance to look at the agenda again this morning, you see that it changed from preliminary to final. Nothing changed from your, well, actually we did add some more attachments from your preliminary to your final agenda. Special call meetings, that's, you know, if you want to, you know, let's say you didn't get a quorum and you wanted to call a special call meeting to make up for that meeting, or if there's some urgent request, that would be reasons to call a special call meeting. Policies, this is how your agenda is organized. This is what tells you how to organize the agenda that, you know, we've been looking at today. That's what tells you how the order goes. Again, we can change any of this. You know, if you don't like the idea of having a consent agenda, if you want the regular agenda before the consent agenda, those sorts of things. There might be some legal way some of those have to go. We could ask Pam, but generally, they can be moved around to suit what works for you all. This tells you what goes under each of those sections. So, and this just tells you that we create a yearly schedule for your meetings at the end of the year before. So it tells the meeting dates, it tells the cutoff dates, so that everybody can plan for their year coming. And actually, Monica, if you could add to the list to email them the meeting schedule for the year. This talks about public notice and posting signs, procedures for presentations. So we have an appendix for the chairperson's remarks. This will help whoever becomes the chairperson know how to run the meeting. And it's really sort of designed to make it your own. But it talks a little bit about how if there's a certificate of appropriateness in front of you, that's sort of where this list comes from. So the chair calls the application by number, staff does the presentation on the certificate of appropriateness application first. The whole commission can ask staff questions on their presentation, and then the chair asks the petitioner to respond to the staff recommendation or make their own presentation. The whole commission can ask questions of that petitioner. The chair basically goes through the public comment portion. And this talks about what members of the public, what the rules are for members of the public speaking. The petitioner is given the chance to rebut public comment. The commission has the opportunity to ask questions of the public, the petitioner or staff at that time. And then the commission, you all close the deliberation. And basically at that point, you will discuss amongst yourselves, but you know, the public and petitioner and they're done speaking. And then lastly, you all vote on the item. this is sort of a summary of how your board will operate under Robert's Rules of Order and what types of motions you can make: approve as submitted, approve with conditions, deny, continue, table. Minutes that are required. The minutes are taken. So this is recorded. The audio is recorded. But we also do a brief summary of the recording, and it is adopted at your next meeting, and then made available to the public, as is the audio. So this is the chairperson's remarks. Once there's a chairperson, it's in quotes and everything. You don't have to say this exactly, but you need to get some of these legalities in. And as you get to know the meetings better, you can make it your own. And then we talked about posting signs. So this is the document that we attach to the required posting signs for the petitioner to pick up, so that they know the laws about posting on the property. All right, that's your procedural manual. Any questions about that? Okay.
So the sign will get posted on the property that we're interested in protecting, is that correct?
Yep. So anything, if it's just something we're discussing, there's not a notice, but let's say that you all want to officially list a property. There's an application for that, and then a public notice process for going through the process of listing something. And that's obviously to notify the public so that they can come and be heard or listen, or you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Technically, these are public meetings. I'm not surprised that you don't have anybody yet. We probably have a few people listening, but probably even a few other staff people listening. But actually, I guess we should. Is there anybody out there? No. Okay. I was going to say, if let them say something. Oh, Gregory Anderson is out there. Hi, Gregory.
Hello.
How are
you? Good afternoon, everyone.
How you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
So the one of the last things I was going to show you today is that overarching ordinance that we discussed. So this is what gives you the power to issue certificates of appropriateness. This power is given to you by the Georgia Historic Preservation Act of 1980. That's what gives you the power to be created, preservation commissions to be created. And that's what allows this ordinance to be created. So it's your purpose, again, definitions. So you are the first of the four preservation ordinance boards here to have cultural heritage and cultural landscapes and the like included in your ordinance. And I wouldn't say this is the only reason, but now is the time. But unincorporated Chatham County certainly has a lot more what we would call cultural landscapes and coastal resources and non-man-made items or resources that need protection. Also, intangible resources. You learned a lot about that in your training on Monday, how those are becoming very important to basically protect the intangible parts of a culture. Pinpoint is actually, it doesn't have, you know, the intangible is new. This was not in the previous ordinance. This is something we're proposing to include now. But Pinpoint, the Pinpoint Heritage Museum is a good example. I think they still do. Last I knew, they do indigo dyeing and crab boils and net casting. And, you know, so those are some of what we consider intangible resources to protect and carry on. Cultural landscapes. So this describes exterior architectural features. We've included historic cemeteries in here. Historic districts and historic properties, of course, but historic cemeteries is a new section. What is a material change? So material change is what affects basically what you review certificates of appropriateness on. So this is the definition of a material change. And then what a resource is. And again, from your training, buildings, structures, sites, cemeteries, cultural landscapes, works of art, or a combination of those. Again, your composition, your terms of office, service without pay, commission powers, loading. Why it's loading, it's very strange. Just that one page. Okay, we'll come back to that page. So designation of a historic district. These are all the important parts that allow you to identify and create historic districts, historic properties, and what are required to be created. Maps, identifications, what criterion that resource would have to meet to be considered a historic property or a historic resource. Requirements for adopting an ordinance for that district or property. As I mentioned, this is sort of the overarching ordinance for the whole county. This allows you to create individual ordinances for the districts and properties. Because for example, the resources are very different, again, like we talked about in the county. So the resources are very different. So you wouldn't want to use the Pennyworth Island ordinance to cover new construction in the Pinpoint Historic District. They're just very different resources. So they have different ordinances. Required public hearings, notifications, actions. What is required to have a certificate of appropriateness? Again, staff review, what staff reviews, what the board reviews, commission, sorry. Building permits, public notice, time limitations on public notice, quantity, it goes right down to the number of signs and where they have to be located, lost and damaged signs. Items that do not require a certificate of appropriateness, generally that's, you know, maintenance and in-kind repairs. Development standards. There is an undue hardship section in here that the commission, for example, can grant waivers or impose additional stipulations in your, you know, in your best judgment to fulfill the purpose of this ordinance. And this is key right here, an undue hardship shall not be a situation of the person's own making. You know, for example, they did an entire rehabilitation without approval. You shouldn't waive those requirements. They did it to themselves to sort of strip that down a little bit. Please ask questions. I know that you'll get a recording of the training too, but they talked a lot about the legalities of these sorts of things and issuing waivers and making decisions and only using the standards to make decisions and not your personal preferences and those sorts of things. Appeals. So this is, you all actually have a demolition by neglect section in your ordinance. Basically, it's failure to provide ordinary maintenance. So that is a very useful section because, you know, demolition by neglect is a big issue, not just through, you know, not just throughout the county, but everywhere. Penalties. So that is another section. I know some of you had some suggestions or I guess surprises about what you could and couldn't do legally. And to think about some of those and maybe even re-listen to that as soon as you get it and start thinking about things you may want to add to your ordinances, to your bylaws, to your procedural manual to cover some of those. I would even consider them some newer ideas with regard to historic preservation ordinances, things you may want to incorporate. And however you want to do it, if you want to send us emails with your ideas and we can mark it up, if you want to mark some of these up yourself. But ideally, what we would like to do is get all of your input and combine them into one proposed amendment and then, you know, look at it again. I'm not saying this is going to happen today, tomorrow, even next month, even by your next meeting. It takes a little bit of thought. Okay. Well, that is everything that I'm going to get some water and take for that is everything I wanted to go over. I was hoping you all could, ask us questions, ask each other questions, talk about some properties that you've seen that you're concerned about. Uh-oh, did I just press the power button? Okay.
Yeah, the sheet went away.
I think you might have.
What did I do?
The screen is all blue now.
All right, sorry about that. This is not my computer, and the button is right there by my finger.
Did you get your drink yet?
I did. I've got my water.
So I'm going to start off. So as I mentioned, I'm particularly interested in the 243 Fallegant property, the historic property, the cemetery there. Give me an example of the bullet points of how we would progress at this point, or any of these properties that are identified or not identified. Give us an example.
So let's say you identified this property, which you have already. Did you say that they recently did a survey?
Yeah, so you did a boundary survey. I actually used to live next to the property, and it's an above ground crypt and an obelisk and some other stuff. And I had SCAD redo some of the brickwork about 15 years ago on the crypt. Their architecture people came out there and did some brickwork, but it's fallen into disrepair. I've since moved from beside the cemetery, and the adjacent neighbor has started building structures, you know, or built a shed and storing trailers and stuff on the cemetery, on the boundary cemetery now. And, you know, it's on the water, and he's taking advantage of expanding his property onto the cemetery property, gaining more frontage. So I'm interested in, like I say, we got a survey, the original descendants. Her name is Bev Vernon. She lives in Massachusetts. She formed a nonprofit, Friends of Bryan Cemetery, and she's looking for this commission to designate this site, to protect the site, obviously. And and move forward with protection of the site before it gets, you know, before it degrades further and, you know, before it fills up with trailers and parked cars or whatever.
Is she the property owner?
In the deed, it says, you know, that that it's the descendants of the Scrivens and the Bryants. And she's a direct descendant of the Bryants. And the Scrivens married into the Bryants. So they're all interrelated.
Pam, do you know how that works? I guess, is she technically the owner then?
I don't know. It was when Tulagi Island was developed. There it is right there. When Tulagi Island was developed, I guess in the 40s or 30s or whenever, that cemetery was specifically set aside for the descendants. So I don't know that you can be an owner of a cemetery. And that looks almost like my car out front, that photo.
I was going to say, we'd have to look to see who actually owns the property.
But
it's listed here as heirs of John Scriven.
Right, heirs of the Scrivens. And so the Scrivens and the Bryans are married together. They intermarried. The Scrivens owning one side of Wilmington Island and the Bryans owning the other, and they ended up intermarrying. So last year we cleared the property. It looks pretty grown up right there. What you're looking at in that picture of the manicured yard is actually cemetery property. Part of the owner in the brick building has continually expanded his yard into the cemetery.
This one here?
Yeah, if you'll put your pointer right on that brick post right there, that's
not,
it.
That
would be one side of the cemetery. Okay, that's right there is the property line of the cemetery, and it extends over to the left, 200 feet. So the cemetery goes about to right there to the pole. So you can see how gradually the neighbor has expanded his property into the cemetery property.
Where is the cemetery proper?
Right in those weeds and all. There's an above ground crypt right back. No, not there. Go to move your arrow up. I mean, keep going up. It's right back in there in the weeds. Those weeds there very much now because we cleared all that out. It's an above ground crypt, and there's an obelisk and several other graves in there. And this is Joseph Bryan, who was a two-time congressman for the United States. And there's some other people buried in there too. It's super historical.
And on the plat, does it? Can you pull the plat back up? I want to see if it outlines what the cemetery, where the cemetery is.
I don't see a plaque. I think that's a mailbox. Plat.
No, a plat. The plat.
Plaque.
Yeah, the map. You'll see the cemetery. There's the cemetery where the red dot is. You can see the cemetery proper is exactly the same size as the lot beside it to the left.
Yep.
Wow.
So the person on the left is gradually, I mean, already he is, you know, taken, you know, from the middle of his property all the way over to the corner, to the bottom corner. If you bring your arrow down to the intersection of the one seat right there, okay, and he's knocked off the whole front of the cemetery.
Ronald. Is he an heir?
Excuse me, Ronald. You said this was Joseph Bryan was buried there, yes?
Yes.
So is it the same Joseph Bryan who actually had the 460 enslaved persons that the Weeping Time property, where that slave sale occurred? Is that the same Joseph Bryan?
That was Butler who did the slave sale. That was Butler.
Well, okay, so
then his father, this is the son of, I think, the father that you're thinking of. if Brian's are involved, it would have been his father.
Right. So I'm actually looking at the ad from the slave sale, and it says will be sold on the 2nd and 3rd of March next at Savannah by Joseph Bryan, and goes into the sale of the term of sale. I have the actual ad because my office did the historical marker application for that Weeping Time property.
I was wondering
if there was a relationship.
Right, it could be Jonathan. I haven't seen the grave in a couple months. Joseph might have been the father, and this guy might be Jonathan. I get him mixed up, the son and the father. Okay, but this is actually the son of. It must be the son. Maybe it might be Jonathan Bryan. I can't remember. Okay, right. They are the Bryans. You know, the first street in Savannah was named Bryan Street, and you know his father was very active with Oglethorpe. So
this is
congressman. I think
what we have is some definite ties and connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's a Bryan. You know, I'm sure, you know, it's definitely the family. And back then they had property all over Savannah. Let's see, mm-hmm. The history involves Jonathan Bryan, his grandson, Joseph Bryan. Okay, so it's Joseph Bryan who's buried there. Joseph.
If that is Joseph Bryan, the ad continues that I'm looking at, and it says the Negroes will be sold in families and can be seen on the premises of Joseph Bryan in Savannah 5 days prior to the sale, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Jonathan Bryan's father. So this is Jonathan. I'm looking at a whole thing on it, you know. So Jonathan Bryan's father, Joseph, immigrated. So Joseph was the father. So this is Jonathan who's buried there. Is that
okay?
Right? Yeah, Jonathan Bryan served alongside Oglethorpe.
Let me look at this. It's been a little while since we looked at this.
Joseph Bryan, his grandson, Joseph Bryan. It's his grandson, Joseph Bryan. It's the grandson.
That's buried there.
The grandson.
Okay.
And Elizabeth did a bunch of.
Yeah, we've got about 30 pages of all the information.
Okay.
We got the whole thing, you know. So it's very interesting anyway, but one of my main things, I'm in direct contact with the descendant, and we're trying to absolutely preserve the cemetery and preserve once we get together next meeting, you'll be very let me just say one thing. Along with him buried there is a lady, that's Delia. Yeah, what's the lady troop foreman? What's the other lady buried there? Anyway, there's a lady buried there who is friends with Fannie Mae Butler. Are you familiar with Fannie Mae Butler?
No, mm-hmm. I'm not.
Okay, Fannie Mae Butler started the whole abolition thing. She married the butler who sold all the slaves at the sale you're talking about.
Okay.
In the 1840s, and she divorced him
because of that
and started the whole abolition movement, and this was one of her best friends described in her book, who's buried in that cemetery.
Wait, okay, now you're setting off, you're clicking other alarms in my head. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
And this lady, she's got a big obelisk there along with her, I think her son or something.
A child, 3-year-old.
Anyway, she was, like I say, she came from the plantation, down in Darien. So when you go to Jacksonville, you go over the Butler River, and that was Butler who, you know, started, who owned that big plantation down there. And like I say, he married a very prominent actress named Fannie Mae. She went down to the Georgia plantations, hated it. She got divorced because of it, wrote a book about it, and she was the instigator, because she was so popular, of the whole abolitionist movement.
Right. And with further agitation, if you follow the agitation on down, it turns into the catalyst or one of the impetus for the Civil War.
Right. Anyway, it's a site which is very important. A lot of history.
Yes.
And just to clarify, was it Ms. Malls? Was that you speaking?
No, that was Miranda.
Thank you, Miranda. Yeah, we were just.
No, that was not me.
Okay, for the minutes, we're just trying to make
sure.
Oh,
my goodness.
Yep. I know it's hard to remember to say your name before. Let's try and do that for the minutes. Once you're in person, you don't have to do that, but for now.
I'm sorry. All of that was
wrong. No, that's okay. I'm glad I asked. Thank you.
So my question is, what do we do, you know, as a commission, or what's the next step? What needs to happen? What do we do? Whether it's that property or something else, what do we do?
Right. So, well, first is getting permission from the property owner, which sounds like you know who the property owner is.
Right.
And then basically there's an application process.
Okay.
So, applications and forms. And we are working on updating these, but we didn't want to get too deep into them until we knew what you all wanted to do with them. But there is a Chatham County Historic Property Designation application. So it tells you all of the things that, in theory, the owner. But Pam, the commission can nominate, and staff and the commission can nominate as well, right? Or they could complete this under the owner's name with her permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the board can do it, but it would be better if the property owner did, but.
Yeah. Okay. So, so somebody, you know, has to take, you know, responsibility for applying for it, but complete property owner consent form. And this says with the majority of the affected property owner signatures, but if it's a individual property, it's a little bit different, obviously. This tells all of the items that need to be submitted with it. Obviously there's fees, but, and, you know, information to fill out. But these are the criteria for designation and the narrative. And it sounds like you have, you know, 30 pages of documentation. We have some here in the office. Sounds like you have a survey.
Yes.
Need photographs, the areas of significance. Just from all the descriptions, you know, obviously it's, part of the county's history. So I don't think that's in question, just what exactly that history is. Of course, you named a lot of it already, but verbal boundary descriptions. Now this is one parcel, so that'll make it all a little bit easier, but this is what you need to do. This is, normally done, again, by the property owner, usually with the assistance of somebody. Mm-hmm. And then it comes before you all as a commission, and you vote to you make a recommendation whether or not it should be listed to the county commission, and the county commission makes the final decision.
I got you. The owner or the heir is interested in relinquishing her rights to Chatham County or whoever to maintain the property, or at least see that it's not, you know, I don't know if by being on our register that it will ensure that it's not, you know, doesn't fall into disrepair. I'm not sure how that works, but.
Yeah, no, it does not. Whoever owns the property is, this doesn't help in any way with maintenance or costs or, you know, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, has anybody talked to the county about whether or not they, because that's a whole different issue. Yeah, is whether or not
I've talked to Pat Farrell, the commissioner. He's been out there along with just about everybody on the commission out there.
Okay.
And they're absolutely interested. I think it might be listed in the state, you know, on the state's map as an historic property, but and you know, that we're trying to get a sign on it at least and designated it such, and the owner is absolutely interested in paying any kind of money to, you know, get it back in the right repair, you know?
Yes, certainly. And of course, you know, listing it won't provide funds for it or anything like that, but it will be required, you know, this listing will make it be required that it stay in repair, however that happens. But yeah, I mean, that's, I wonder if that discussion should happen. Well, that discussion, and I'm just thinking, you know, while I'm running my mouth at the same time, but that discussion about who maintains it can happen outside of the listing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that could be a separate issue.
Right. She's in contact with Pat, you know, Pat Farrell and several other commission members. So, you know, that could absolutely be a separate discussion. But right now, I'm so glad to be on the commission because I'm absolutely, you know, like I said, I live next to it. I paid personally for SCAD to come and try and protect it 15 years ago. And now that there's a new homeowner on the side who wants to basically do away with the cemetery and double the size of his property, I'm particularly interested in that property not getting, you know, degraded and erased, basically.
Yeah, I could see why. Ms. Picone, you have your hand raised? I think you need to unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I have a question about the grant. Are there procedures and whatnot as far as what the grant money will be used for? And the second question is, what's the duration of the grant for these 500 different properties or intangibles or whatever they end up being?
Right. So the grant can only specifically be used for the 500 properties for which we applied for the grant.
It's okay.
Very specific. And it begins after the grant is awarded and ends the following September.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It's very short.
Yeah. But does it say what monies you can apply it to?
Yes, you can only use it for surveying, period.
Okay, for surveying. Okay,
yep.
Great.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There, because we applied for a survey grant.
Okay, specifically. Okay.
And I'm not saying you all are in bad standing with CLG, but you're not in good standing because of your hiatus, basically. But step one was putting the commission back together and then applying for a survey grant. So you're getting there. We're getting back. The CLG is getting back into good status. And after your survey is considered up to date, we can apply for grants for other things, National Register nominations, physical, you know, restoration projects, you know, all sorts of things. But right now we can only apply for survey grants.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry if I missed that earlier.
No, I actually did not go over that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse me, Mr. Horton, if you want to gather all of that information, start looking at this, you know, application and, you know, come to the next meeting. And I guess you could, doesn't even have to wait 2 months,
right.
Start collecting the information. And of course, ultimately it's this commission that votes on it, majority vote. But these are all the items that you need to apply.
Okay, I'll make sure right now that the landowner, that the heir gets it, and I will absolutely have a copy of all this for everybody at the next meeting.
And I could, yeah, and then you all as a commission can start looking at that and, you know, decide whether you feel like it meets the criteria and ultimately your recommendation, your majority recommendation is the deciding component. Okay.
All right.
Does anybody else have anything that they want to talk about before we wrap up for our, this has been great. I'm excited that you all are excited and that you have ideas already. Is there anything specifically anybody wants to talk about or just give you all lots of time to mark up these documents and think?
Sounds good.
I do have a question. So with regard to other properties and petitions that we will hear, is there a compiled listing of properties to investigate that is staff driven that necessitated the formation of this board?
Great question.
So they it was the county commission that wanted this commission reformed, which is terrific. We of course have, you know, wanted it to be reformed for years, and when we were asked, staff felt that the sorry, I have 800 documents open here. Staff, and we put this in our proposal when we were asked to propose reforming it. Our proposal, was to start by resurveying the ones that have been previously surveyed to, one, get you all in good standing as a CLG, because this is what they have on file as your survey. So if you get that updated, they consider your past survey complete. But I also feel like staff feels like it's a good place to start to see what we still have from what was considered important, you know, at the beginning of the preservation movement, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Right.
Sorry, could you just say your name real quick? Who was that?
That's Miranda. Oh, this is Miranda. I apologize.
That's okay. I'll get to know all your voices. Don't worry. It'll just take a little while.
So as the commissioners rocked along and entertained this, having this board reconstituted. So is there a list or ideas of properties that is staff driven? Beyond this.
One other thing.
The image. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'll say beyond the image.
Yes. So there is actually a recent, not an in-depth survey that were like the ones we're required to do for this grant, but basically what we call a windshield survey that was done by a local consultant, a federal grant for post-IRMA survey. Mm-hmm. And that survey, that grant project identified 1,500 potential resources in unincorporated Chatham County.
Okay.
And we have that list.
Okay. That should be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I thought that might be a little much for today.
I would agree.
So ultimately the goal is to get, 500 resources per grant to in-depth survey all 1,500 of these resources. That includes this 250 that 1,500 does, because we actually gave them this list as, when they got the project as a sort of a baseline.
Okay, thank you.
On this map, that Fort Pulaski and several other places are identified. I mean, we associate that with a very historic place. Why would that be on this map? Is there something the commission would do further than what it already is?
They could, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we wanted it locally listed, but this is a federal property, so I don't think that would, be something. Of course, the director of Fort Pulaski is on the Historic District Board of Review too. So, but it's on this because it's been surveyed. It's a historic resource. It needs an updated survey. Not necessarily all of these items would you want listed in your districts, but you still need to identify everything. The CLG grants even want you to identify resources that have lost integrity, so that they know what you have, even if it has lost integrity.
I got you. It just piqued my interest. On here is the South Channel, Savannah River Lighthouse, and we just got through 6 months ago redoing it with the Fort Pulaski with the National Park Service. So I wonder, what is it that our commission would do to further further that? What would we do?
Well, the best thing you all could do is we could obtain those surveys.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because they probably aren't loaded in the State Historic Preservation Office's survey platform, which is what is required by your CLG status. Now, they're okay. Federally owned properties, so it's a little bit different. It's a little bit trickier. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as long as whoever runs these federal properties is willing to share the information. Then, and you know, there, you know, Fort Pulaski, I mean, although it's not locally protected by your ordinance, that thing's not going anywhere. They take care of it. They, you know, they have staff that takes care of it. So I don't think it's something that you all would ever need to try to locally protect.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean we don't want it identified as a resource in your county.
Okay.
That we have all, you know, there's just so many levels of federal protections and local protections and all these different levels. And I would not, other than, you know, climate issues, obviously, with those properties. I mean, Cockspur is surrounded by, the lighthouse is surrounded by water on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But, you know, otherwise, I don't think they're at risk for, you know, demolition or loss of historic integrity. They're definitely well taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what you all are looking for, is properties that are at risk.
And that's true.
I would say that's, you know, way up there on your list of things to look at, is properties at risk, underrepresented properties. That's the place you want to start, in my humble opinion. I'll have enough to chew on for the next couple months.
I believe so. That's for sure.
And, you know, this doesn't have to be, you know, radio silence for the next 2 months. Please, you know, email me, ask me questions. Monica will send you all emails, and you'll have her email address. We can pull, you know, things out of our, we have archives here of items that we've surveyed. We have survey cards for a lot of these. If you're, you know, interested, like, I don't even know what 47 Morning Drive is. Can you send me the survey card? I'm interested in that property. That's what we're here for. We'll share what we have. We're here to answer questions.
Okay.
And if nobody has anything else, I'm looking for that. Here it is. Oh, yes. Okay. So other business, we don't have any approved staff reviews. We don't have any acknowledgements today, but other business, who wants to take it upon themselves to nominate a chairperson or a vice chairperson and a vice chairperson? I know you want to. You can nominate yourselves too, by the way. You don't have to nominate somebody else.
I'd be glad to be a chairperson if there's nobody's.
You said you offer to be chairperson? Is that what you said?
Ron. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm sorry.
I didn't hear of the like the last few seconds because my audio went out.
Is that Miranda?
Yeah.
So we need a chairperson and a vice chairperson nomination. Ron has nominated himself for chair.
Okay.
So we need a vice chair nomination.
I'll nominate myself for vice chair.
Miranda?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. So great. We have a nomination for Ron for chair and Miranda for vice chair. And you all will vote on those two at the next meeting. And we'll put that vote at the beginning so that if you
want. You forgot to ask if there were any other nominations.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are there any other nominations? Ask everybody else as well.
Thanks, Pam.
Any other nominations?
I don't see any hands raised either.
All right.
Go ahead, sorry. Heard somebody start to talk.
I think we can close. This is Bernita on those two nominations.
Thank you.
I make a motion.
Appreciate that. All right, so like I was saying, I'll put that at the beginning next time, and we can vote on those early and see if we have a chair and a vice chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I enjoyed the meeting, and I enjoyed hearing Bernita too.
Good to hear you as well.
The next regular meeting will be May 4th at 3 p.m. It's listed as hybrid, and I published this before I knew we were going back to in person. If there's anybody who needs to discuss staying virtual, just email me. And with that, I ask for a motion to adjourn.
Motion, first motion.
Thank you.
Second.
So, motion adjourned. Thank you all. It was great to meet everybody, and I look forward to working
with you.